You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
I'm a geek. I'm a nerd. I'm a data wonk.
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
I talk about food a lot on the show. It's a thing. I am a foodie.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. It is Wednesday hump day. It is 5 o'clock today. A little special lineup today because we had a whole hour with Heather Cox Richardson. Big thank you to Professor Richardson for spending so much of her very valuable, highly in demand time with us this afternoon. I know I feel a goodly bit smarter for it. I hope you agree with me. We've got a special installment, therefore, of Broad Appeal, which is a regular Wednesday segment. I'm often, on my good days, joined by a fabulous co-host, Dr. Kristen Lyerly, OBGYN, host of her own program. Now on the weekends, tell folks where they can listen to your show, Dr. Lyerly.
We are on WGBW and WISS, and of course, on the Civic Media app, starting at 3 o'clock on Saturday. And this week, we've got a barn burner coming from the little town of Freedom. We're talking with Freedom Town Chair, who also happens to be the Outagamie County Park Supervisor, Justin Schumacher, about what is it like to be the town chair in a town of 6,000 people. It's a really eye-opening conversation, one that you don't realize you need to know, but actually you really do.
I love that. I know I'll be tuning in. Got my Saturdays have gotten very heated up. I got Amicus with Jim Santel in the morning. I might pop on that other national public radio affiliate for a little, you know, afternoon Saturday. But I've been tuning in, Chris, and I'll be very interested to hear that. Especially, do ask him some questions about his experience as a parks director, having worked for Milwaukee County. I worked directly with our parks director, and the challenge that so many county park systems are facing. Those aren't mandated services. How do you pay for, help keep the infrastructure of your park system going, but how do you expand access to people with disabilities, trying to get an accurate count of users? So much happening in and about park systems. And in the state of Wisconsin, this is sort of an interesting example of what I wanted to talk with you about today, Kristen. In Wisconsin, we have largely, obviously, our state park system, but we have a county-based park system. We do not use independent districts. For example, in other jurisdictions, you'll see like arts districts, which are their own government entity, and they have separate taxation authorities. You'll see specific park districts that are their separate government entities, not within county governments. We have to fund them within the structures and budgets of counties here in the state, which has posed challenges to all counties, large and small. So be sure you get to dig in about some of that good nerdy stuff. I'll be listening.
Well, and you talk about some of the vision things, like making sure that they're accessible. What about when a storm comes through and a tree is down or a shelter has been damaged? They are waiting. They're looking at all of the parks across the county thinking, what's going to happen? What's in danger? Where do I need to be? So this is a huge job, and they do all of those things that we just take for granted. We're like, the park is there. You want to go play? It's so much more than that.
It really is. And on that same point, Dr. Lyerly, we're seeing more and more lawsuits across the country being brought by especially local governments against oil and gas companies because they affirmatively lied about the impact of their products on the environment. So the lawsuits have started to assert that local taxpayers are effectively being forced to subsidize oil and gas companies. Well, how would that work, you would think? Well, oil and gas companies, if they were in fact lying for decades about the impact of their products on our environment, and your environment is changing because of it, and you're having more extreme weather events, local government infrastructure, so think roads, highways, parks, docks, if they are, if the jurisdiction borders water, more flooding events, more repair. And in park systems, it's a big deal. And in fact, that increase in damage, that increase in constant expenditures because of the climate impacts and the impacts on natural resources by oil and gas companies, we, the taxpayers, subsidize all of that, which is therefore in effect, a subsidy to oil and gas companies. So yeah, these oil and gas companies largely have enjoyed incredible subsidies from local government taxpayers in a very unique and special way. It applies on the national scale as well, but very particular to local governments. Of course, having adverse impacts on our family's overall wellness. Kristen, you are a particularly agitated about those microplastics, which are everywhere.
I am. I mean, you're talking about the big impacts in our communities that we're all paying for. What about the very small impacts in our bodies? Have you been seeing the research that's been coming out lately about the microplastics in our bodies? How it accumulates in places like our arteries, where blood has to flow, that makes it harder for us to get blood to places like our brains. This is really dangerous stuff, stuff that we hadn't anticipated, and it all goes back to oil and gas. What is the responsibility of the oil and gas industry for all of us personally, especially those of us who grew up? We didn't have oil and gas. We didn't have as much plastic when I was a kid back in the 70s. Correct. It has changed so much with all the plastic water bottle. I mean, everything's in plastic now. So my entire lifetime, since I was a kid, I've been exposed to this. I wonder how much plastic is in my body.
Yeah, it's really, really frightening. And again, if you're not familiar, you're thinking to yourself, why, what do plastics have to do with oil and gas? Plastic is made from oil and gas and crude oil reserve. It is fact, it basically like an oil byproduct. You need it to make plastics. Very hard to do anything about microplastics. It's impossible to skim for them. It's very difficult remediation, and it's everywhere. Which brings me to an interesting topic, Kristen. You and I have been thinking and talking a lot about the tariffs. If you think about plastic and how much of it there is in the world, right? A lot of this is being used to make certain consumer products very affordable. Plastic is cheap relative to other input products that could be used to make the sorts of consumer products. All of your electronics, virtually every single toy, car parts, everything that we've got, food packaging, plastic everywhere. And it's all going to be getting much more expensive because of Donald Trump's tariffs. What have you been hearing? And just as a point of fact, everyone, first quarter of 2022, we had positive GDP growth of 2.4%. In the second quarter of 2025, we're down 0.3% negative GDP growth. So something, and that's to date in the second quarter. So keep your eye on that. Kristen, what are you hearing from people in and around the Green Bay area about tariffs and the economy overall?
That they are going to have to trim their desire for dolls this Christmas. Did you hear that Donald Trump said that instead of 30 dolls, that for Christmas, they would probably just be getting two and they would pay more
for those
dolls? Yes. People are worried. You know, we're not a sophisticated group up in the Green Bay area. Like, you know, we just have regular conversations as we do all over the state. People are starting to feel it. They're starting to see it, and they're starting to wonder, is this the tip of the iceberg? And it is. What I've been hearing from farmers, especially, think about all the soybeans we sell to China. And now with the tariffs, what are our farmers going to plant? This is planting season. Our farmers are itching to get out in the field. They've been planning, but they don't know if there's going to be a market. And they're already, I think 90% of what we saved in tariffs during the first Trump administration actually went to compensating farmers for lost crops due to the tariffs. What's going to happen now that the tariffs are so much more profound and the impact will be so much greater?
Well, there's this very disturbing reporting that has come out that the Trump administration cut, basically zeroed out the budget that allowed local farmers to provide food to local school districts. And here in the state of Wisconsin, we have millions of dollars of food that is literally just rotting away. And our local farmers, which intended to help support local smaller family-owned farmers, that program's not going to be there anymore. And it was a direct link, right? From talk about farm to table, from farm to school lunch table, and yes, all of that gone.
It was the direct link. Yes. Farms don't magically grow things and then they show up in your school lunches or at your farmers markets or wherever. There has to be a supply chain, and this took that supply chain away. So now these farmers are sitting there, as you said, with all this food, and there is all this need, and it is literally just miles away. But without this program, the connection isn't there. And if they had taken the time to say, you've got a year to shore this up, maybe we could have made alternative plans. Maybe we could have figured out some different ways to do this. And that is the thing about all of these DOGE cuts. I don't think anybody would argue that it's a good idea for government to be more efficient, that there are places where we can cut. But the way to do it is not just to go in and say, all of these programs, gone. The way to do it is to say, we're watching you. We think that there's an opportunity here to make you leaner. We want you to demonstrate back to us how you can do this better. I would be totally up for that. But what's happening is people are hungry. Farmers are sitting there without the ability to do business. And every single one of us is going to suffer, is already starting to suffer as a result of this.
Well, and the thing about Donald Trump's comments about the dolls, and this is a funny one, right? And Cal, let me know if you got the doll sound of Trump saying this about the dolls. Well, one of the things that I find super ironic about this is that what you see in these weird things that come tumbling out of the president's mouth is the Donald Trump translation of something that a smart person that knows a little bit about tariffs said to him, right? And you put it into the Donald Trump brain and out comes this weird statement. What had likely been said to him is something in the ballpark of 80 to 90% of the toys that are purchased in the United States come from where? Where, everybody? China. Right? And so, yes, you might want to say something, Mr. President, to prepare people for the fact that things are going to be more expensive and it's likely going to be quite, quite bad when we get into the holiday buying season. It will have been, even if he undid it all today, the damage is already done. The ships are already sailing, right? Like 40% empty, 50% empty. So when I think about like where you're going to see the pain points showing up for regular people, I think back to school purchases, mm-hmm, and I think holiday time, and people, mm-hmm, are really going to feel it. Kel's got the sound. Let's take a listen.
The children will have two dolls instead of 30 dolls, you know, and maybe the two dolls will cost a couple of bucks more than they would normally, but we're not talking about something that we have to go out of our way. They have ships that are loaded up with stuff, much of which, not all of it, but much of which we don't need.
First of all, like, just so many things there. I find it rich, and like, pun intended, to have a billionaire talking about what middle class families do and don't need. Mm-hmm. Does he even know what's on boats that come from China? I don't think he does. The man has no understanding. And secondly, man, what if you were talking about manufacturing plants and not dolls? Well, we'll take two of those instead of 30, and they'll all cost more. I'm sure CEOs across the country are really happy to be hearing that. Not at all.
Not at all. And 30 dolls. Who gets 30 dolls for Christmas? My grandpa used to tell me stories about how much he cherished getting an orange in a stocking.
Yeah, right? I'll tell you who got $30 for Christmas. His daughter, right? Like Ivanka, Ivanka probably got $30 for Christmas. Right. So his billionaire barometer is a little off. Listen, we're going to take care of some quick business. We come back, we're going to talk about the importance of sounding like regular people, even when we're talking about tariffs and economics and politics.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. It is broad appeal here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Got Dr. Kristen Lyerly flying co-piloting with me this afternoon, and we are both very pleased to bring on our next guest. Her name is Renee Paplum. She ran for First District State Assemblywoman last election cycle. She's going to be doing so again. She ran against Representative Joel Kitchens, a now six-term incumbent. And let's start with why people might know about Mr. Kitchens, because he said something pretty insane during, where did this happen? Tell us, Renee, what he said and where it was and why this was important.
I believe he was on the assembly floor talking about women's reproductive rights and freedom, and he made, he had talked about how he knew more about the topic, given the fact that he was a veterinarian. So the topic of abortion, he was trying to link up to his skills as a veterinarian.
No. This is me, Kristen, OBGYN doctor, saying no.
Dear Mr. Kitchens, probably don't do that again. You look like a big old fat jerk. But listen, I wanted to talk to you, Renee, and Dr. Lyerly and I have been talking about this. I'm an economist and a lawyer. Kristen's obviously an OBGYN. We were talking about the idea that one challenge, I think, for everyone when you get involved in politics is to not end up sounding like a politician, that you need to sound right. like a regular person that cares about regular people things, that you have an understanding of it. Something that a guy with a golden toilet is probably not going to have any understanding of. And that's a big piece of why you decided to run against a multiple term incumbent, though you weren't successful last time. I had every confidence that you will be this time. Is that part of why you got interested in running, Renee?
Right. Yeah. So really when I started community activism work, it's really about just getting your allies together and talking to your allies and talking to people in your community to see where those needs are. And then kind of regurgitating that, right? Paraphrasing that back. It's not something that's prescripted or written down in Madison. It's coming right out of my backyard and in my hometown. So when you look at what's happening in Madison and how they play the game, they're playing a game of politics, but that doesn't equate to action items here in Assembly District 1. We have a need. We have a need for a candidate. I was on a search team with Dr. Lyerly, who is a political powerhouse, and we had a couple great candidates on the line, and when they kind of fizzled for different reasons, which were understandable, I stepped up and said, yep, I would love to put my name on that line.
Well, it was pretty obvious that you were the right person. We all knew it from the beginning, but we had to convince you, which happens a lot with women running for office. Hey, let's talk about some of the amazing things that are happening in Assembly District 1, which includes all of Kewaunee County, all of Door County, a little bit of Brown. We're seeing mutual aid groups popping up in Sturgeon Bay, the Northern Door Activism Group. They are doing tons of stuff. They had a book club over the weekend. You did extraordinary things in Kewaunee this past weekend. Tell us about it.
Right. So right after the November election, about three or four new groups, and not necessarily partisan, but coming out of the election results, had formed in Door County, which was huge. So I tried to be a part of most of that where I can, in the mutual aid and the Northern Door activism groups. Indivisible in Northern Door County is almost like their own political arm up there, and they're doing great work. So I just held a rally 2 weeks ago in Algoma, and then we did it again in Kewaunee this weekend. And our folks from all the way from Northern Door came down to visit us in Kewaunee and just show some solidarity. And that's what this is really about. When movements start in history, they start with people linking arms, getting together, and showing support for one another and the community.
So important. I always feel invigorated when I see people out on the street. A few weeks ago, not the hands-off protest, but there was a movement then a couple weeks after that to have people on the weekend standing by freeway overpasses. Yeah. I had to do some driving. It is really invigorating. I also think in more traditionally or presumed to be more red districts or counties, getting people out there and visible for folks in their community and saying, hey, yeah, there are people who disagree with this. We're going to be speaking up, letting people know that asking tough questions and asking your elected officials to actually be responsive to the constituents, to show up, to face their constituents is so very, very important. tell folks where they can find or follow you on Instagram and Facebook, Renee, so that they can find out more about what's going on up in your neck of the woods.
Sure. So they can follow me on Facebook, Renee Puplum, at Renee Puplum, same with the Instagram handle. And then I'm also on TikTok. I love to make TikToks of my activism work and what we're doing and just to show people how it looks. It's quite fun to do.
And your Renee, spell your last name for everybody, Renee, so they can find you accurately.
Sure. It's Puplum, P-A-P-L-H-A-M.
Renee is brilliant on TikTok. I really encourage you all to follow her. She's a lot of fun, and she's talking about the things that we care about. To go come full circle, she talks about regular things that regular people are concerned about. And hey, isn't that what we should be focused on right now?
Absolutely. Yep. Renee, you got any more rallies coming up? What's the next big organizing event on your calendar?
I do. So I am linking arms with our allies to the south in Two Rivers. We're kind of just heading down the lakeshore. And we are going to have a rally on Saturday, May 17th at Central Park. And we changed our time. It's going to be from 2 to 3 p.m. That Saturday.
So that is May 16th. Is that correct?
Saturday the 17th.
Saturday the 17th. I'm glad we reconfirmed that. And tell folks again where and when they can join you.
So it's at Central Park in Two Rivers, and that will be from 2 to 3 p.m. Bring your own signs, and we'll be there rain or shine.
No more billionaire overlords. Tax the rich. Thanks so much to Renee Puplum, former candidate for the 1st Assembly District. You'll see her on the ballot if we have any decent kind of luck this next election cycle. My thanks to Dr. Kristen Lyerly, my very frequent co-host for Broad Appeal. Folks, keep it locked. Come back with us. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name's Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Big thanks to my last two guests for our segment, Broad Appeal. And very happy to welcome you all to a little segment we like to call Sports Weekly. It is Wednesday. It's hump day. We need a little relief from the politics. So every Wednesday at 5:30, we'll bring you a little bit of sports talk. And on my better days, I'm joined by folks that know more about sports than I do. This week, joined by Ryan Pollock. He's a writer and contributor to Brewers Fanatic. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show, Ryan. Lovely to have you.
I'm ready to get started.
I love it when someone can share with my sports nerddom. So let's jump right in, Ryan. The Brewers were able to put up what I think was a critical morale-boosting win this past Sunday against those dreaded I-94 rivals, those dastardly Chicago Cubs. A shutout, nonetheless, despite some scary moments there. How important was that game just from a team morale, fan engagement, sort of season trajectory perspective?
Well, prior to that game, we were already on a three-game losing streak against all Chicago teams, and it's already bad enough that it's our rival. But if we're trying to defend the NL Central and get it our third time in a row, just winning is going to give us a huge morale boost. It's going to steer us into the right direction, and it could provide us that great energy for the young talent that we already have on the team.
Yeah, that's really the hallmark of the Brewers season over season. We win when we are able to develop new talent, either coming out of the farm leagues or guys that have been otherwise undervalued in strategic trades. That is the Brewers' pathway to division wins and to potentially, hopefully, knock on wood, eventually slotting up an old World Series. For fans out there that are really engaged with the Brewers, Ryan, what do you think we should be looking for as sort of the canary or the indicator, the harbinger of whether or not this is going to be a winning and positive season for the Brewers or more of a rebuilding season?
Well, first things first, you got to think that because we are surrounded by young talent, there are going to be bumps in the road for these players. I mean, if you look at Jackson Churio last year, who ended up becoming this big-time prospect, number two prospect in all of Major League Baseball, he was off to a rough start for the first couple of months. I mean, he was hitting towards the 200 batting average, and then all of a sudden, come June, he exploded onto the scene and ended up becoming a Rookie of the Year candidate, taking third place. So I think the first thing you got to think of is being patient with some of these younger guys. And with Bryce Terang, I was a one person who was quick to judge right away, because back in 2022, when he was first coming up, he wasn't really hitting the ball well. Within the major league roster, and I was putting him down as a trade candidate, and all of a sudden he started blowing up, and he's now the best hitter on the team. He's hitting above 300, and I don't know how ridiculous that might not sound, but that's saying that every 10 at bats he's getting hits three times, and that's insanity.
Yeah, and in this day and age of the MLB, batting above 300 is quite an accomplishment. Bryce Terang, Ryan, I'm glad you brought him up. He is one of my all-time favorite players, because what he did was work really hard on his offensive game, broke down his hit to the very basics, retooled it, really worked on some hitting technique, both in the offseason coming into last season, again coming into this season. He has been a student. It's one of the things that I talk about a lot about why I love baseball so much, and that is, if you are a guy that's got, again, you got to have supernatural talent. But in baseball, if you work the technical and you've got good coaching and you're willing to put those hours in Bryce's case, you know, in the batting cage with the hitting coaching staff, you know, you can really, really explode out. I think Bryce Terang is a great example of that in baseball. He's certainly an anchor in the lineup today. He's been so much fun to watch last season and this season. Again, and a bunch of fun out in the outfield as well. The guy can make some plays, no doubt.
No.
I wanted to ask you a little bit. Jesse Winker is now on the injured list. He's a former Brewer. He gets booed mercilessly anytime he is in town. I can't stand it, because he was such a spoil sport and just a brat when the Mets played the Brewers to end last season in abject tragedy. What's the deal with Winker? Why does he come off so terribly? And listen, Brewers fans were maybe not super kind when he played for the Brewers. He had a terrible season, then went to the Mets and did really well. But he's basically behaves as a boorish jerk and says things that are completely unnecessary to basically antagonize fans. What's his problem, Ryan?
What I feel about him is that he is a little bit upset with the current fan base of the Brewers being the kind of rude towards him towards the end of his tenure. I mean, keep in mind, we got him from Seattle the year prior as part of a Colton Wong trade, and we didn't expect much of him. We were paying $8 million to play the outfield or DH spot, and if you even look at his numbers, he was hitting below 200. He wasn't getting that same power pop that he had with Cincinnati Reds when he was that Brewer killer that we remember. And yep, because he was being constantly utilized over and over again by then manager Craig Counsell and was not putting up the production, we're very passionate fans. The Brewers are very passionate fans. And if there is something just the slightest bit wrong, seeing the same thing over and over again, we're not going to like it, and we're going to tell you about it, whether it be nice or very rude, like we did with Jesse Winker.
Yeah. Here's the thing that blows my mind. He was getting paid $8 million to suck, right? And like, you get ticked off because the fans are a little bit disappointed in your performance. I mean, man, you're a professional. But this brings me to my larger point, Ryan, which is, especially in the last 2 weeks, it's like an explosion of bad sportsmanship. We see it again and again. Tyrese Halliburton's dad, like, getting up in Giannis's face after the Pacers knock the Bucks out of the playoffs. And then this kid who calls Shedeur Sanders to literally revel in that young man's what was a few painful rounds of the NFL draft. Let's take a listen, because I didn't get to talk about this yet on the air. Let's take a listen to what Giannis had to say about Tyrese Halliburton, a breakout star for the Pacers, getting up in Giannis's face and talking trash, dropping some F-bombs after the Pacers knocked the Bucks out of the playoffs last week. Let's take a listen.
Which at the moment I thought he was fine, but then I realized he was Tyrese's son, which I love Tyrese. I think he's a great competitor. He was his dad, sorry. Coming in the floor and showing me his son a towel with his face. This is what we do. This is what we effing do. This the F we do. This, I feel like that's very, very disrespectful. You know, having somebody's dad, which I'm happy for him. I'm happy for his son, and I'm happy that he's happy for his son. That's how you're supposed to feel. But coming to me and disrespecting me and cursing at me, I think it's totally unacceptable. Totally unacceptable. Okay? And I'm not the guy that points fingers, because in my neighborhood, snitches get stitches. So I don't want to say something, you know, for him to say, to get fined or anything. But it's not respectful. Attack with him at the end. And we, I think we're in a good place.
Now, granted, the Bucks-Pacers tensions go back decades, literally decades. But, and Tyrese Halliburton, I mean, admittedly, his dad has been kind of a clown show for a while. But it seems to me that a lack of sportsmanship, sort of in-your-face attitudes have gotten more prevalent. And the guy that called Shedeur Sanders, he's the son of an NFL coach. Like, this is a kid with a ton of privilege. We actually have the call of this coach's kid prank calling Shedeur Sanders, acting like he's going to get picked, which cruelty. This isn't funny. Let's take a quick listen.
This is Mickey Loomis here, GM of the Saints.
How you doing?
Good, how are you, man?
Good, been waiting on you.
Yeah, we have. It's been a long wait, man.
No, for sure.
We're going to take you with our next pick right here, man.
Yeah, yes, sir, let's be legendary.
Yeah, but you're going to have to wait a little bit longer, man.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Ready to go!
What does that mean?
What do you say?
I don't know.
How are you going to ask us what it means, and you was on the phone?
You heard that?
He said you're going to have to wait a little bit longer.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Why did he talk?
I don't know what that was. It's 50-50. But nobody got this number, though.
It was private.
Huh? Did they just troll, bro?
You can wrap that. Thanks, Cal. I mean, Ryan, we can chalk that up to maybe like a young man being stupid. But you should know better. His dad's a professional coach in the NFL. Kind of harkens back to some of the stuff way back in the day with Barry Alvarez's son and some of his terrible behavior. What's going on with sportsmanship these days, Ryan?
I really, possibly after listening to all the news that surfaced, to me, this feels like we're starting to blur the lines between what is passionate and sportsmanship versus what is just bragging and egotistical. I mean, with Tyrese Halliburton's father in that situation, he's very supportive of his son, and I respect that entirely. Like, you're seeing your son go out there and thrive, but you don't intervene. Like, you can cheer loudly and be as loud and proudful as you want, but the second you start interfering with what his job is. You start interfering and being like this rowdy, annoying, like fan that's getting in people's faces, players' faces. If that was any other fan, there's a good chance that guy could be completely like removed from basketball altogether. And ironically enough, that's what's being done with his father now. He's not going to be seen at any Pacers games for the foreseeable future. And as for Shedeur Sanders, and he's trying to get a job. Like, you work constantly over and over again to try to get this job. And imagine, like, just any old blue collar worker, they're trying to get their own job, get the credentials, and then they do the interview process, and then you get a phone call, and you get pranked. You're trying to find out your future here.
Yeah, it is. It is beyond. Now, I'm not going to mistake Shedeur Sanders for a blue collar worker, but it is cruel. And it should not be acceptable. What does sportsmanship and the lack thereof these days say about our larger political discourse and our country at large? Some concluding thoughts for this Wednesday and a little over the hump and Trump. Some good news to send you off into the tail end of the week. Coming up next right here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Keep it locked. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Thanks to Ryan Pollack. Check out his work at brewersfanatics.com.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. It is the last segment of the day, and we usually reserve this for a little of what we call over the hump and Trump, and we're going to do that today. The theme is going to continue about sportsmanship, what it says about our current political moment. My senior producer, Jamie, hopping on to the show with me to have this discussion. We talked with our last guest. Thank you so much to Ryan Pollack from Brewers Fanatic for joining me. We talked to him a little bit about the fact that Shedeur Sanders got a prank phone call from a young man who is the son of one of the Atlanta Falcons coaches. And basically, like, punked Shedeur Sanders, said, yo, we're the Falcons, we're picking you next, and that was not true. So his dad was forced to address this. Wanted to take a listen and then get your take as a parent about, you know, when the kid screws up big time and royally, what do we do, and what lessons can be learned? Let's take a listen to what the prankster's dad had to say in a press conference when I asked about it.
What was your reaction, and how did you process it?
Yeah, obviously not happy and shocked. And so I made the Falcons aware of the situation, and then our next course of action was to try to get a hold of the Sanders family so we could apologize in person, which we were able to do. The Sanders family, Shedeur and Coach Sanders, were amazingly gracious. More gracious than they needed to be in a moment like this.
That was a phone call?
Yes. And it was an opportunity for myself and for my son to apologize.
I think he handled it with some grace. I also think what he shared with everybody, that the Sanders family was incredibly gracious and accepted the apology, is something that's worthy of note. What did you make of all of this as a mom, Jamie?
As a mom, I think you have to take it as a learning opportunity, right? I mean, it's hard when you're a parent because you think you've taught your kids, you know, the right things to do in life and the wrong things to do in life. And let's be honest, this is the defensive coordinator of a football team in the National Football League, right? You would probably expect him to be a little bit more careful with some of that maybe secure information, like, you know, a potential draftee's phone number. But I think he handled it well, and I think he used it as a learning opportunity, probably for himself and for his probably adult son. I'm not really sure how old this kid is, but he's got to be at least 18 years old, right? But you got to have a little grace and humility. And I think as a parent, one of the first things I always wanted to do was just jump into correcting. And I think that's your natural instinct. You don't want them to do it again. But I think as a parent, you really have to stop and realize that, you know what, we're all going to make mistakes. And I could yell about this. I could get really angry. I could punish for this. But at the same time, you know, we've probably all been there. We've all probably done something really stupid that we regret. And those were always the moments I'd take a step back. And then we talk about it. Mm-hmm. My kids would always have some sort of punishment that fit the crime, so to speak. But I feel like if you have that conversation with them, even at a young age, it was way easier for my kids to learn from those moments and for me to show humility or to be able to put myself in their shoes and really understand why. I mean, sometimes they're just trying to learn. Sometimes they are doing something really stupid, but at the same time, there's always an experience.
Prefrontal cortex, not fully developed. Yeah. You know, two things occur to me. One is that, in my opinion, when you look at what I'm going to call general social interactions, like, are we courteous to people? Are we saying please and thank you and opening doors? And how are our kids behaving?
Lessons I taught my children, by
right,
the way.
Right. As sportsmen and women, and how to win gracefully, how to accept defeat gracefully. Two things occur to me. One, boy, we could use some return to those first principles now. And secondly, it is very clear to me when I look into the political sphere today, that some of our leaders never were taught those basic lessons. Mm-hmm. And it is painfully obvious. We can all think back on when we were a kid growing up, like the kids that never had any consequences, the kids whose parents constantly made excuses for them. Yesterday was Teacher Appreciation Day. I know from every single teacher that I know that work in school systems today, that, boy, they just, please, parents, please let your kids have some consequences so they know how to operate in the real world. Yeah. It often seems as the politicians get away with the stuff that the rest of us would never get away with.
There's a lot of people, it feels like, who get to get away with things in life. And even when my boys were growing up, they'd see friends who were able to do things that they were never in a bazillion years allowed to do, right? So it's kind of the same thing. But I feel like if you're a parent, it's really easy to want to bubble them if your kids are in the camp of having consequences. But at the same time, they have to learn what it's like in life to deal with those individuals who have never had those consequences. You're going to run into them everywhere, whether it's in the political world, whether it's in sports, whether it's at your job, whether it's your next door neighbor. Somewhere along the line, you're always going to deal with those people. And unfortunately, it's the rest of us that have to deal with the children who were never taught.
Yeah, it's true. We pay a price when kids who turn into adults who never learned those basic first principles to be gracious in victory and gracious in defeat as equally. So my big thanks to you, Jamie, for hanging out with me in this last block. My thanks to each and every one of you for listening along with us. Remember, tomorrow is our big cyber program. We're going to talk about individual cyber risks that may be posed to your teenagers. And we're going to then pivot and talk about cyber risks as a national security and election security matter. You're not going to want to miss any of that. Please, everything we learned, we probably learned in kindergarten. Let's revisit, shall we? It's a good day to have a great day. Take care, everybody. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together. To have a great, 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 great day.
I don't know what I need, but I'm doing something. The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.